From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and this is kind of a year-end show that we will be talking about how great we are going to be. And it's also that time of year. It's not just Christmas time. It is the time when a lot of us begin to start planning what we're going to do for next year, maybe what we're going to do long term as well. And that's kind of one of my favorite things to do, is to talk about how great we're going to be and make the plan. Maybe I'm not as good on the execution at times, but I love the planning process. I love the dreaming process. Today I'm joined by Craig Hetrick. He is a man that helps people like myself bring their dreams together, make the plan, work the plan, figure out a way to execute on the vision. So we're going to kind of be getting into the nuts and bolts of this. And I think that's important for all of us right now. And I think, you know, that we are building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs, with a culture of love and helping one another. So a lot of our plan has to do with driving the outcomes associated with that Backyard Advantage, right? The engineering of wins. So today we'll talk a little bit about what we're doing at the Growth Factory. We'll use me as a guinea pig a little bit, but we'll also use Craig as a guinea pig at some level as well, because Craig is an entrepreneur. His business is growing. He is not just a solopreneur trying to sort of grind it out, helping guys like me. He's building a real company. So we're going to use he and I as people that maybe you might compare, contrast what you're working on. So with that said, welcome to the show, Craig.
Thanks, Mark. Always good to be here.
Well, now your background, and maybe I'll have you elaborate on this a little bit. You were a CEO of a significant size company. You've been in corporate leadership. And for the last several years, you've been helping entrepreneurs and medium and small businesses become a little bit bigger. And so maybe just give us a little bit of that background and what
Sure.
you're working on.
So I'd spent 30 plus years in the corporate world, as you know, and I was either president or CEO of four different food companies, ranging from size of 8 million all the way to 420 million. And that was great. Loved doing that. But really about 7 years ago, I had an epiphany. An epiphany was my core purpose, my North Star for the future was going to be about helping leaders, businesses, and even family members reach their full potential. And everything I did was going to tie back to that. So that caused me back in 2015 to turn my six-month-in notice to Java City, who was CEO of that, saying, I want to start my own thing and plant my own flag. And so today, 7 years later, it's really been the best years of my life, bar none. And so the Hetrick Group now is, we're EOS entrepreneurs, EOS implementers, rather, entrepreneur operating system. My wife, Joyce, co-founder, she is doing that. We have our own intellectual property in the foundations of management and performance management platforms, which is rapidly growing. We've got another, what's the next level of strategic planning and finding your differentiation that's coming out soon. So I found out that we're not just building a lifestyle business, we're actually building an actual business itself. Yeah. And it's really interesting.
That's when I saw Joyce last night at a Christmas party for the Entrepreneurs Organization. Were you there too?
No, I was actually doing a planning session for a client out of town. So
okay, yeah. So I saw her and I kind of glanced around. It was a crowded room, a really cool vibe at Golden One, and I saw her, and so I was kind of looking around for you as well. But hopefully she had a good time.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, good, yeah. Good. Okay, so you mentioned the word epiphany. I think that's something that happens to us at times in our lives. Sometimes it's these small, I guess, epiphanies, these little breakthroughs that give us an idea. But you made a really hard pivot from being corporate CEO of Java City. And I've made a pivot too, right? I owned, I'm a security camera sales rep or salesman that, built some companies and sold them. So I had a pretty hard pivot as well in 2010, 2011 timeframe. What was your epiphany? What was that? What happened?
Yeah, what I found is, even though I loved being a CEO, I wasn't hitting my passion button at the hardest level of being a CEO for other other people, right? And
making other people money, was that any of
that? Yeah, I could have been a little bit of that. But I think now that if you can take your superpower and align it with your passion, you've got like rocket fuel, right? You can change the world, change a community. And that's what I found. My passion was really about helping others reach a full potential. And I was really good at it. So that was my superpower as well. And that really has played out because we have a rapidly growing business. I enjoyed being CEO. I think it was pretty darn good at it, but it wasn't lighting my passion fire after a while.
Do you feel like you are unleashing your full potential in this because you are the entrepreneur in this scenario? And I think a lot of times we may be thinking to ourselves, am I using my full potential? Am I doing what I was called upon to do? Did you have some of that sense?
Yeah, it's just kind of understanding what you do very best at, what you're very best at, in getting most of your time focused around that. Mm-hmm. And if you, especially managing
employees.
Yes, and especially if you're passionate about it, then like I said, the two and two together was amazing for me. It was a big epiphany. It says, wow, like time is standing still. I'm helping people and I'm really good at it. And I really like it. So the two of those together said, it just made this something I want to do a lot more of.
Well, the one thing that I've seen in almost all entrepreneurs is we don't spend enough time in this zone, right? Talking about how great, thinking about how great we're going to be. We might think about it, but we don't, especially if we have a team, we don't set aside that time. I think of that 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And there's that one part of the book that talks about, I don't know if you guys talk about this in any of your stuff, but there's the four quadrants, right? It's kind of like a time management type of exercise. You know, what am I working on that's, you know, not important? Important, not urgent. Misspeaking here. So quadrant one, I think, is important, urgent. Quadrant two is important, not urgent. Yeah. And then the other three, you know, the unimportant stuff you probably shouldn't be working on as much. And we should spend a little bit more time in the important, not urgent, which a lot of times is dreaming about this stuff, planning it, actually visualizing that. Do you see that with all the clients that you
deal with? Oh, 100%. That a lot of times we don't get to that part because we're so in the day-to-day. The impactful and urgent, I call it, is the day-to-day stuff. A little bit working on a business, mostly in the business. Mm-hmm. But we got to rise above that and spend some time, like I said, dreaming and thinking about what could be, you know, how could our company be differentiated? What kind of org structure do I need to take us to a much better place and a bigger scenario for everybody? But we don't spend much time thinking about that because we're in the day-to-day. Yeah. We got to rise above that.
Well, let's talk about the dream part and the manifesting of that. And because if you get together in a two-hour planning session, quite often the people in the planning session don't really have a chance to share what's really in their heart, what they're really dreaming about, what they visualize. So in terms of that, I believe that we can actually manifest our destiny. We can manifest that vision if we can see it clearly enough and vocalize it clearly enough with one another and share it with one another so that we all start understanding that dream together.
Very important. So for instance, when I'm in a vision exercise, the first thing I'll do with the team, I said, okay, close your eyes. And now it's December 8th, 2033. What do you see?
Ooh.
What does it look like, feel like?
10 years out.
Yeah. I want you to write that down. And that's where you start to get the dream thing. And you've got answers that are all over the place. Really cool, creative thinking. And the team starts to discuss it. You know, what future looks good to us and why? And we start to shape it, mold it. It could be a five-year view. It doesn't matter whether it's 5 or 10. But that's how you get to make sure that it's not prescripted and it's got the CEO saying, this is where I think we should go. Because a lot of times it doesn't come from the CEO. It comes from everyone else in the room having their say in it and then molding it together.
I think a lot of times we don't have big enough dreams. Mm-hmm. We imagine small. We imagine incremental growth versus this change of who we can become. Do you see that?
Yeah, and I think of it this way: is I think the competitive advantage is a short time only thing. Is that if you think that I have this competitive advantage and your competitor is just sitting there twiddling their thumbs, no, they're thinking about how they're going to run up one side, down your back, and down the other, and slam your head in the pavement. If you don't think that, then you're kidding yourself. So you've got to continuously thinking about how we can, hey, could we be different? But what is that thing that we're shooting for? What does it look like? What is that compelling vision? That is what we need to be very clear on. And then how do we get there? Push it out.
One of the things that you asked us to do is think beyond the one-year goal, beyond the one-year vision, if you will. And you use the term three-hag, which is, I don't know if that's your proprietary but it's basically the three-year vision, three-year goals versus, you know, the BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goals. Why don't we put a time, do something chronological with that and think of it as a time thing. What we did when we did our strategic planning session, not this year, but last year, with your three-hag in mind, is we did a little exercise whereby we all wrote down what we envision 3 years out. And I remember, and then we wrote it down, then we all read it to each other to see the different personalities for sure are going to come out. Because if you start with that as the baseline, you might get, you know, stuff all over the board. And for me, I came up thinking about the best of the best in my backyard party. And as the backyard advantage begins to materialize, we would have that big party. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, me and my team would be reflecting after the party, having a cold beverage, sitting around the fire, again, talking about how great the party is, but also appreciating that feeling that you get when you realize that your dream's in the process of coming true. And to me, I live in that romanticism or in that romantic mode. Other people don't live there. Thoughts?
No, I totally agree. And I'm constantly, as a consultant implementer, pushing you out a little further, right? Because sometimes that teams don't realize how much they really can do, that they can actually do a lot more than they think they can do, right? And they can go places they didn't think they could go. And what's really cool, Mark, is when you see them do that, like a year later, and they start to push forward into a whole new product area that's very different, and they're executing well, and they're starting to own it. And then they're like, wow, we can do that. What else can we do, right? And it starts to snowball on top of itself.
That confidence is so important, but it's so fragile, and it's hard to get going. But when you start making real progress on your dream, your confidence level increases. It goes through the roof.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I know you see that with your clients, but I see it within our team as well. But let's talk about the foundation for the vision. Is there a certain way that you sort of lay out the foundation for the vision?
Sure. As you know, I'm EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System Certified Implementer. And we have this tool we call Vision, the VTO. And it's a simplified strategic planning document. It's not like vision where you think, oh, we're writing a vision statement. It is much more than that. It's really your overall strategy. So they have core values, so some very core pieces of it, which are really the expected behaviors of each core value, frames the culture of your organization. You have things like core focus, which is your North Star, decisions based on it. Two components. One is your why as a company. Mm-hmm. What does your company believe in? Why you do what you do? The other one is, what are you best at? What's the company's superpower? So those two things called core focus, all your decisions need to line up against that. Then you have your 10-year target. So what is that, or 5-year target? What is that compelling future that's going to get people to walk through walls to want to be with that company, right? So what is that? Usually, and what I love about EOS, for instance, is a few words. People can't remember 15 words. They can remember 3 words or 4 words. You can give some bullet points to describe it, bring it to life, but they can remember 3 or 4 words. Then it's, who's our target market? Who's that ideal customer profile we're going to spend all our sales and marketing efforts? And then what are those differentiators called three uniques and how we win business in the marketplace? And we continually sharpen that saw. What's the 3-year view of that vision? So that's really the guts of the vision component. But the biggest thing I've had epiphany in the last 2 years, Mark, is it's one thing to say the words, and of course it's to slim it down so it's easy to understand. It's another thing to bring it to life. So we talk about, hey, you got to present this plan to everybody, all hands. But it's not just saying the words. I think it was CEO of Java City, that's what I did. Now I really realize that you have to bring it to life. Core values, so people doing core values well, embracing body, what does that look like? Decisions we made that line up to our core focus, explaining that decision and why it tied back to our North Star. Then talking about a decision that didn't line up to North Star, that could have maybe made us lots of money, but it just wasn't what we believed in. It wasn't what we were best at. And then going on down the line, for instance, you know, here's a place where our three uniques want us business. And then after that meeting, and we do this quarterly, is at the department level, we're digging in even tighter. So we're saying to an engineering department, hey, you know those three uniques? You guys designed this element that gave us a unique, and here's how we win business with all your work and all your efforts. So what we're trying to do is to connect everybody in the organization to the vision so they know where we're going, how we're going to get there. And so we're trying to get it from somebody doing a job to somebody that's like, my company. This is my company. I'm engaged. I'm committed. I understand it. And when everybody understands that we're rowing hard the same direction, then we've got some significant rocket fuel for our future. As opposed to just a leadership team really understanding it and everyone else doesn't really quite understand it or really engaged or committed at a high level.
Yeah, I think the one thing that when I think about vision, if the vision is stuck in the founder or CEO's head and the teammates don't see themselves in the vision, don't feel that ownership, mm-hmm. don't feel the skin in the game, then they're not repeating that messaging. They're not talking about that vision with other people that need to be inspired to rally around that vision as well. If it's only coming from one mouth, it doesn't work nearly as well.
That's 100% true. And then the other piece of that is, what is my future? So we know where we're going to go, how we're going to get there. We're connected to it. We understand it. But what's in it for me, the employee? So you have to, with the end in mind, where we're heading is to have career pathways for the people that are in the organization, right? So a lot of times it's success is being a manager, and that's it. And that's really short-sighted. You have some individual contributors that really shouldn't be managers or want to be, but there's an individual contributor pathway forward. There's a management pathway forward. This is our vision. This is how the structure is going to look like. Here is your opportunity to grow and be with this company for the long haul, and that increases retention. So they're committed to the vision. They understand the vision. They can see how they can really thrive in this organization. So they're going to become more sticky. And people want to complain about the fact they have turnover. They're not doing these pieces of the connecting division, showing them what their future could look like. They're not doing that part.
Yeah, we saw that with the backyard advantage, going from my backyard to the collective backyard of all of Sacramento. We saw people be able to see themselves in the broader vision. And the vision took off, you know, kind of created a life of its own instead of, you know, Mark and his buddies and his portfolio. It's really Sacramento's portfolio, and we saw that change in messaging and in our approach be a game changer for the Growth Factory, for the Backyard Advantage, you know, overall. Yeah. So thinking about that, one of the things that I have heard from many people, and I felt this myself as a CEO time and time again, is that I felt a little bit, I guess, uncomfortable about repeating myself, repeating the words. And I already told you guys, I have to say it again. And not that I don't want to say it again. I just don't want to oversay it so that you get bored of listening to it. Mm-hmm. But from my experience, we need to over-communicate that message or do what we feel like might be over-communicating. Mm-hmm. So that not only do we hone the message, but that message, it takes a lot to have a message like the Backyard Advantage resonate with other people. And so you have to repeat yourself over and over and over again.
And what do they say, 5 to 7 times before you really get it? But think about what I was saying before about making the vision come to life and giving examples. So each time you do an all hands meeting quarterly, you can have a different example. Hey, here's another example of core values being embraced and embodied above and beyond. Here's more decisions we made that tie back to our core focus. Here's some more wins that we had that tie back to our three uniques and how they tie back to it. And if you have different examples, that I think that gets people to understand it even deeper because it's a little different. It's not just you saying the words, because you're right. You say the words and people just, if they can't like connect to it and understand it and what's my place in it, it just doesn't do anything for them, right? So that's what you got to do. And then bring it back to the department level and then have the department head talk about, again, how you're connecting to everything on that vision statement. And so we're not just parking the vision. We are working on the vision every week in our meetings. And most companies have a vision, just kind of put it to the side. 3-year plan makes a nice doorstop. We're actively executing against it every week.
Yeah, we've more recently honed in on this. And some of that probably came from your advice, your suggestions. But I've talked about this Backyard Advantage being the most connected community in the world with a culture of love. And that's a little generic, is love is a fuzzy feeling, which is part of the Backyard Advantage. But when you think about love as an action, love as a verb, what does that mean? And ultimately, that means helping one another, helping the other people within the tribe. And a central part of that is engineering wins. And so that, to speak to your point there, that's one of the things that we are celebrating is when we engineer a win. A couple of my teammates are really good at connecting dots. One founder has a challenge that probably needs some help. Well, who would be perfectly suited to help that person? And so you end up connecting a few dots so that you can get to that person, hence the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. But if you can engineer that win, then it takes that friction out of, you know, having to search for who that person is if you're the founder. And so that's a key of what we're doing. But we celebrate it when we connect those dots, when we get that person to third base, right? It's like, we got that founder to third base. Now all they have to do is score.
Mm-hmm. It'd be great to actually, when your subsequent like town halls with everybody or bigger meetings, to bring up those, here's how we're engineering wins. Here's examples of that. So everyone in a community, the Backyard Advantage, could fully understand what we're doing and how we're doing that. So,
yeah. And ultimately I would love it. And I think this is begin to happen at a really small level, but what would be ideal is if not only was I sharing the wins, sharing how we've engineered wins, but we get other people doing it, working independently, interdependently with one another, instead of it all boiling it up to the Growth Factory leadership team or Mark Haney. If the tribe was not only helping each other, but celebrating those wins together, reinforcing the vision, reinforcing the mission, it's just so much, it takes on a life of its own.
I agree with that. Yeah, good point.
So in continuing through here, turning the visions into reality, are there certain techniques that you talk to founders about or leaders about in terms of making them a little bit more actionable? Are there, I know you were talking about EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System, and this is almost like a goal setting sort of approach. You call them rocks, right? You move the rock from one place to the other when you accomplish the goal. But maybe talk to us a little bit about what that looks like.
Sure. So we understand our 5 or 10 year target. This is where we're going to reach. This is what our future state looks like. And it's compelling. Everyone's excited about that. Then we bring it down to a 3-year view. What's the 3-year view look like, feel like to everybody? What has to be true for that to happen? Some big planks of strategy. Then we bring it all the way down to the ground 1 year. So what's the 1-year metrics that we're looking at? But the 1-year, full year goals that we're working on, and those full year goals are the North Star for the year. And those full year goals should tie back to your 3-year and back to what the ultimate vision is in some way, shape, or form, and just bringing it closer to the ground for execution. So once we have those full year goals, our 90-day world is really based on that North Star for the year? What are those full year goals? So it's a very thoughtful and very focused approach at executing the vision. And then, of course, we meet every week. Well, you have L10 meetings mm-hmm. here where we're holding ourselves accountable for achieving metrics and working toward our goals, solving issues, not going to wait forever. So we're working hard and executing toward a 1, 3, and 10-year plans.
The number one obsession of a CEO, I believe, is to focus on clarity within the organization, clarity of the vision, clarity of the mission, what are the goals? And you talked about L10 meetings, right? So we have to communicate in order to make mm-hmm. that happen. We've got to communicate in order for things to be clear. And meetings are a part of that. Even as much as, you know, a lot of us don't like meetings, if you have a productive meeting, it's a lot more tolerable. And so the L10, that stands for level 10. It's a 10 out of 10.
Yes.
And so you want your meetings to, by the end of the meeting, you want everybody leaving that meeting, ranking the meeting, and then hopefully people are giving it a good grade, like a 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, walk away aligned, basically, right? And we're really talking about the most impactful and urgent stuff going on in our business, right? What are the issues that we're facing that could impact our ability to hit our scorecard metrics, which are really our leading indicators that keep us on track to hit our revenue profit goals, our big quarterly goals to keep us on track for achieving our 1-year plan and our 3-year plan. What are those issues that we're facing and really addressing them at the root cause and making them go away? I mean, a lot of these where we kick the can down the road, for whatever reason, we're not getting to the root cause. We're trying to solve symptoms. It just gets hard, so we punt. And what happens when you punt, the productivity stops, your ability to execute toward your vision is delayed. And we just aren't moving as fast as we need to be.
Solving symptoms. That's interesting. I want to dive a little bit more into this because I'm making an admission right now. So we operate on your system, the EOS. And we, as a leadership group, we get off track, as you know. Mm-hmm. But our audience doesn't know that. There's a little admission there. We tend to get off track. And maybe it's because we're focusing on symptoms or the issue of the day. You end up going down a rabbit hole, and these meetings can get easily derailed. Sure. You show up for the meeting, you expect to have a level 10 meeting. It starts off good enough. And then next thing you know, you're drifting and you aren't focused on the key things within the meeting because you haven't embraced the structure.
Yeah, I think there's this thing called engagement capital, right?
Okay.
I call it all the time, preach it. So people like me, a little ADD, have only so much engagement capital. So if we that are in a discussion and we start going off track, in my mind is like in Pebble Beach somewhere playing golf, right? Because I can't follow this conversation, so I'm gone, right? Just think about everyone else in the meeting. How many people are really in it or are just kind of zoned out? So what we're trying to do is to say, okay, that's an interesting idea. Let's put that in a parking lot. If it doesn't really help us solve this right now, we hold our hands up as leaders to get us back on track. But the biggest thing is that if it starts to become difficult, when we start talking about an issue, you're at a symptom. So usually I'll say is, hey, what's the higher view of what we're talking about today? Why is this so important? When you start to do that, why does this matter? When you start to do that, you get a little bit deeper in your thinking, and that's it. Right. So somebody should point to is that's the issue we really need to solve for. Right. And a lot of times, most often, it's not that remotely close to what we're actually talking about. Right. Oh, OK. So let's solve for this. And then we hit it and we solve it forever. And we don't chase our tail symptoms or don't get off track.
Interesting thing there that makes you it's a self-reflection, because I think most companies actually get themselves off track. Mm-hmm. Number one, regular cadence in terms of meeting. Most companies don't even have a regular cadence for meeting. It's like, oh, we got a problem, let's meet. Or we got an opportunity, let's meet.
And those 2-hour meetings or 20-minute meetings.
Right. Those are good. I mean, it's a good reason to have a meeting. If there's a problem or an opportunity, let's get together. But just that regular cadence where we are, you know, we're looking each other in the eye and asking ourselves, are we on track or off track on the main goals of the company, the main goals within your department? We have to ask ourselves that. And we often, though, we don't we take too long getting through that. It's like, look, we know you're on track. We don't need to hear all the, you know, all the issues associated with that. On track, off track. And because when you have a 1 hour meeting or a 90 minute meeting, you can only tackle one or two big issues at a time.
Sure.
If you start going down the first one that comes up, you know, this person's on track with their goal, but they've got, you know, they hog the mic, if you will. And, you know, we go off track on this big, deep issue. And the rest of us don't have a chance, or the rest of them, if it's me, don't have a chance.
Or, yeah,
don't have a chance to, maybe they're disengaged thinking about Pebble Beach, but we also don't get through to the work. We don't get through it all. We don't, you know, we've not tackled maybe the most important, most pressing issue of the day. We're tackling the first one that came up in depth.
Yeah. And the other thing I see is that teams that aren't as cohesive and healthy as they should be. And I say it all the time. Well, we're healthy. We talk about anything and everything. Let's think about that. Can you really talk about everything? I'll throw some issues out. And, oh, well, maybe two people of the six are talking. So there's a thing we call, you know, team health, team cohesion. And it's really if the team members understand each other at a deep level and really fully understand their intentions, what makes them them, right? Then it's easier for us to be vulnerable and open up. And I find a lot of teams don't go there and they're not cohesive. They don't learn a lot about each other and what makes them tick and what made them what they are today. Because sometimes there's some quirks in there and they look at those quirks as being bad intentions, but they're just really what they were faced with when they grew up. It's really not a bad intention. So really getting to understand each other at a deep level and where we can really get healthy challenge out there and people are vulnerable and engage in that kind of conversation. That's where the better ideas come out, when we're engaged in a healthy conversation with some disagreement.
Are there some techniques that you utilize to bring out that vulnerability, to build that trust so that we are more comfortable sharing how we really feel?
Yeah, there's a called personal history stories, and this is the OS where we talk about where were you born and raised, number of siblings growing up, biggest challenge growing up, and that's where you find out what made them who they are. You know, somebody had a parent that was in drugs, and then they realized they had to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. That's why they're maybe a little bit more of a micromanager. They want to control. So it's really interesting to hear those things. That first job, worst job, and then something unique about yourself. And that's like the basic one. There's five dysfunctions of a team. We talk about the different levels of team health, trust, and ability to have conflict, commitment, accountability, attention to results. We walk through each of those layers as a team, rate ourselves, find out where the gaps are, things like that that we do for team health.
In the vulnerability piece, we've worked on that a little bit, and people are a little bit reluctant to share. And when you are reluctant to share, then, you know, things surface, you know, and sometimes in a negative way, the outbursts happen. But if you get comfortable being vulnerable, being yourself with mm-hmm. one another, we're a lot more effective. We're a lot more alike than we're unalike. So let's just accept each other and our diversity for what we are, I think, if we want to have an effective team. But I see that that's difficult for a lot of mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like your question about what happened in childhood. What mm-hmm. was your, you know, what was the biggest challenge in childhood? One of the things that we did was run a timeline. And basically mm-hmm. you go through your life and then you talk about the highs and lows. And when you start sharing, you know, the difficulty in childhood or the tough times you've had throughout your life, or even the great times that you've had in your life, it ends up bringing out a lot of emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it can be sad, or, you know, they can
hurt it all.
People can cry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that vulnerability gets exposed right in front of the whole darn team.
Well, but especially how people react to it, though. People are supportive and understanding, right? So, mm-hmm. yeah. So I'll ask a lot of times during that, your biggest challenge in childhood, say, well, how has that made you who you are today? How has that influenced that? And a little bit more comes out, and they talk about, well, kind of their personality, the way that is now. And now you know where that was rooted. So now you again know somebody's intentions. Are they really an ass, or is it really what their situation, how they grew up, made it so challenging, so they had to react to it a little differently than you would have thought? Oh, it's really not that way at all. I can work with that, right? I can be vulnerable with that, and we can make sure that we can get along better.
You know, we've talked a little bit about sort of execution on the vision and the goals and so on, but I do think that there's a lot of people that are maybe starting at the beginning, and so maybe I'm going to circle back around to how your vision ends up changing over time. Your vision changed a little sure. bit for your business. My vision has changed for our business, and it's when I've gotten other people involved that the vision tends to get better and become stronger. But I think that crafting a vision that's different, I talked about big, and that's one thing that can make it different, create a big vision. But a lot of times we think about what that vision might look like, but it might be kind of similar to what other people mm-hmm. are doing. And I think it's important to come up with a vision that most people would not think is even possible or maybe wouldn't even imagine.
Yeah, change the game, I call it, right? So I was working with Grin, and I don't get credit for this. They're smart guys and doing a great job. We talked about how could we craft a vision that would be very different. It would differentiate our company. And they looked at, well, there's the influencer marketing category. We're going to change that and really fuel the creator economy, where creators now are dominating it. We're going to focus on them. And that totally changed the way the game was played, right? So when I look at it, and if you are pushing and driving that, you can start to own that. So it's really understanding the landscape, how the landscape is going to change around you. So this exercise I do is my new strategy system. What is the, let's think forward, the changing of technology. How will the changing of technology affect our category? How could it affect our category? What could be opportunities in there, right? What is the landscape around the changing consumer or the social kind of changes, the industry regulations? How can that impact or negatively or positively our category? And what are opportunities in all of that to compete on other attributes or really approach the whole market very differently than what's going on today?
Yeah, and even before you are idea generating, or we are idea generating on where we're going to take the company, I think part of that beginning stage or beginning step of the process is a self-assessment. If mm-hmm. it's yes. some people do a SWOT analysis, I talk a little bit about an ikigai, which is kind of like finding out your calling. It's it's where the intersection of, you know, what you're good at, what you love, what the world mm-hmm. needs, and what you can get paid for. That intersection can kind of be your calling, and it can be a compass, if you will. Starting with at least an understanding of what you got to work with. What am I going to do with what I got? And a lot of times we have these assets within our company that have a lot of value, but we don't recognize that they have value. And so we don't really know how to put them into action. So mm-hmm. what do you do in terms of that self, I guess, self-assessment within a company, or maybe even you did it with your company?
Yeah, so we do SWOT and variations of SWOT, for instance, and that's then I rank the SWOT. So key strengths, what is our number one superpower of our company? What are weaknesses? What are our biggest opportunities and threats? And that really helps us develop planning from that. But there's also other things. I call it basis of competition, kind of next level in my strategic system, where we start to look at how does the industry compete today? What are the attributes that buyers will buy on in the whole market, whether you're cheapest, middle, most expensive, whatever that is, highest quality, lowest quality, what are those attributes, top 10, and then ranking the competitors against those on a 1 to 5 scale, and yourself, real objectively, and where is their white space today? So it's kind of, where are we today, right now? What are we crushing it on? What attributes, and what are we not? And then is there some attributes that nobody's really crushing it at, like a 1 to 5 scale, they're rated 2 or 3? That could be some white space, but does that matter to my ideal customer profile? If it doesn't matter, that doesn't help you much. So that gets you the current kind of basis of competition today to see where you are at. And it, like you said, it could look at some areas you thought were not a very important attribute, but maybe more important to our customer than we thought, and nobody's doing it well. That could be some white space that we dial that up and own it.
Yeah, you use the term white space. I like that, because we want to be, if we want to have our company be worth a lot of money, have a lot mm-hmm. of value, make a big enough impact, it needs to be differentiated, maybe even its own category. I think what we're working on with the Backyard Advantage, there's really nobody else that's doing this, is spreading the concept of love, right? Well, we've got the you know, we've got the venture fund, and we've got this entrepreneurial development group that work together with a lot of the Sacramento leaders to drive, you know, better outcomes. But there's no one doing that. It's kind of a category in and of ourselves. And I think it's important that not just to avoid competition, but to have it be interesting for people, right? To have it be different enough so that, you know, people want to come.
It has to be unique, but it has to be compelling to whoever our target audience is. If it matters to them and it's unique, and then we're going to double down and own it and then continually improve it to where our competition is chasing us up the hill because we're not static. Remember, we're going to continually differentiate our business. And so, I think the growth factor Backyard Advantage has a big lead right now. We just got to continually strengthen it, and that can go anywhere.
I keep thinking that a vision needs to be so compelling that the CEO is extremely excited about it. It becomes like something that they obsess on at some level, and that it, you know, it just stays front of mind, tip of tongue at all times. And if it's not a really cool idea, not a real badass idea, I mean, why are you going to think about it all the time? Because, I mean, what we think about most is what we become or what we influence. And if it's not even something that is exciting enough to be thinking about all the time, is it really a compelling vision?
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's got to be where people can understand it. And it's short enough, they can understand it, and everyone's talking the same talk there. They have the same elevator pitch that gets repeated, not just the founder or someone like yourself, but everybody's saying relatively the same thing in a short amount of time, and that message just really, accelerates.
Because nobody builds a truly great company alone. You need other people to get excited about too. So if you can come up with something that excites you, or the leadership team comes up with something that excites them, then now we've got to get the rest of the team excited about that as well. Some of that has to do with like visual stuff for a lot of us. I like to write stuff down. My daughter Ashley, who you know, and we have this co-working space here at the Growth Factory, where we have a lot of different businesses that have set up shop here in these individual offices. And one of the things that she does, she's in real estate, and she's bringing the people that have space here together to do a vision board, right? And I don't know if you've ever done one of those visioning board exercises where you cut out, you get magazines or whatever, you cut it out, and you create something visual for yourself. How important is that visual stuff? Not necessarily the vision board itself, but keeping things visual.
Yeah, so I think when you start talking about your process, and how you take customers through the journey, and it kind of exemplifies your and points out your differentiators, that should be in a visual in some way, shape, or form. A graphic that's easy to understand, or pictures that's easy to understand. Again, then that you take that back to the team and communicate to the team in visuals and pictures, and they connect to it more too. But yeah, so instead of just a bunch of words on a paper, I always like graphics and pictures to better show your vision and your differentiation.
We have things around here called Markisms, and they're really mantras that I've tested on the show at some level in the different speaking that I do. And some of them, I use them on the show all the time, like nobody builds a truly great company alone. Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. We're building the Backyard Advantage, and so on. But I think if we can work on getting those mantras repeated by other people, then we know we're on to something. Do you help them come up with those? And it's almost like a branding exercise, if you will. It's to come up with these mantras or this wording that is attractive enough to other people that they want to use it.
Yeah, and that's what we look at anything we do, whether it be your core purpose, your core focus in terms of the what are you best at, your BHAG, your lead competitive advantage. All those things are three or four words, right? And so three or four words, people can remember that, understand it, repeat it, and it gets to be repeated in the marketplace. That's one better. So we try to keep it simple, and less words are better. Simple is scalable.
How do you sustain momentum? So Backyard Advantage, we've got it going. Getting over the hump is has been one of the more difficult things in my career, starting the show, talking about the millionaire business partners in my backyard, and ultimately now the Growth Factory and the Backyard Advantage. It's been a challenge, but I feel like we've got a little momentum. Mm-hmm. How do we sustain that momentum?
Sure, it's follow the process. So if you've got a solid 3 to 5 year plan, and of course you're going to maybe recalibrate or course correct a little bit here and there, but month in, month out, quarter in, you're meeting again to as a team to understand where we're at versus our 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, and what are the most impactful and urgent things for us to focus on in the next quarter that tie back to all that and solve problems that will help you keep on track. So it's really the process and the cadence in which you're meeting, recalibrating, course correcting to stay on track that help you get there. And you're building upon the ideas. And as you go along, of course, you're going to have higher bars, right? And so it's not like you're going to go from here to here. You're going to hit each bar, achieve it, and you're going to hit your 30% growth for the year, but you're doing it in a systematic way, in a planned way that we're all ready for. And we execute it in a week in, week out, quarter by quarter, instead of just saying, here's our plan and kind of winging it from there.
One of the things that people run into often, I think a lot of us, we run into almost like what we might call writer's block. I don't have any good ideas. I'm not really inspired at the moment to dream up something cool. It's just where I'm at in my life. And I often tell people to create themselves some downtime, right? You need some hang time so that you can let your mind wander a little bit, get curious and so on. But I contrast that with, we also have to show up, because inspiration comes when we get in the game, we get in the trenches, we show up at events, we start listening to what guys like Craig Hetrick are doing, what other people are working on, to be inspired to think, well, if those people are doing something like that, here's something that I might be able to do. So thoughts about how to get some of that, I guess, inspiration to trigger your imagination to go.
Yeah, I think for the leadership team, should always have some of these centers of influence and organizations they belong to, like entrepreneurs organization, whatever that is, that can help inspire you. It may not be the idea itself, but the fact there's a light bulb, but that idea spurred some other idea. And not just the CEO, not just the integrator, CEO, but the entire leadership team, even managers, what outside influences and organizations can you belong to that can stimulate your thinking? Because really, it's not just surround yourself by people that are like-minded in your industry. I would like to talk to people outside of my industry and belonging to some of these leadership groups, no matter what they are, or industry groups, or not industry groups, but other types of groups like CEO peer groups, or
you have peer other networking groups within your within your business. You have a number of high level peer groups. I don't really know the full extent of what these peer groups look like, but these, I know what entrepreneurs organization looks like, but you have these CEOs that get together and share war stories, I suppose. What happens?
Yeah, so I have a group of larger companies that are, 50 million to 200-300 million, and we meet quarterly, and we meet to discuss big strategic ideas. So we find that big companies that are like more nationally focused, their CEOs are traveling a lot. It's hard to be in a monthly meeting. So by quarterly, we're monthly meetings can get a little tactical sometimes, but quarterly, each CEO can present an issue, and they're big, game-changing strategic issues that we talk about, and we solve them. And there's a lot of...
You use one another to solve them.
Yeah, and what I was getting at before, Mark, is that the people can come from different industries, and they can have different functional experience. There's John Bissell's an engineer type, right? And we've got some high-level sales VP type talent. We've got some operations talent, right? R&D talent. And they all view the world a little differently. They all have a different mindset and framework, and they ask questions from their frame of thinking. That's a really good question. I like that. And it gets you to get the most perspectives on the table that are different than what you would think. It gets you out of that frame of thinking and pushes that frame out, right? Because leadership teams sometimes can get into one narrow frame of thinking. We want to pull that out, right? So that's the way of doing it. My group or entrepreneurs organization, other organizations you're part of that help you think that way and can get other different mindsets in or healthy for the business.
What challenges are... I see so many companies that looks like a Me Too type of business, you know, kind of a copycat, and they really don't scale. They're not as scalable. They're not as, you know, they're not as valuable. What challenges do people have in terms of like creating that unique vision? What do you run into?
Yeah. So, they don't have enough horsepower on their team. For instance, they need to bring some in. I know my past in running company, I would bring in suppliers. They would sign some NDAs, some other type consultants that I knew were good and some areas were deficient in. So you can always bring in some horsepower if you have people that think too much the same and maybe not big enough, you can bring that inside.
Bringing the horsepower, that's a great idea. So go to, it could be somebody in your industry or in another industry, but they've got a perspective that maybe your inner team doesn't have.
Well, they're listening to it, right? And again, you guys are really close to narrow this thing down and they ask you a question out here and you go, huh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. I never thought of that. And they don't have to know anything about your business. But usually I get it, they're in somewhat the same industry, but in just a different part of it and maybe with a different functional area, expertise they could bring to the party.
Okay, so... Well, I'm going to have two more, I guess, topics because I think that they're relevant. Is one is measuring the success. If it's not, you know, we all know that it needs to be measured if you want to have your best chance of maximizing the opportunity. So what ways do you measure typically in the business?
Yeah, sure. So, well, for instance, if the EOS side of things, you would have a scorecard, you're measuring leading indicators that keep you on track. With the actions and activities, keep you on track for hitting your profit and revenue numbers for the month. There are quarterly goals that are measurements in there. And so as much as you can make them measurable and very specific, a little bit of the smart part, the better the goal is going to be. Some goals are very ambiguous. And we look at it and go, did we actually do that? But I'm not really sure what we meant by that. That's like epic fail, right? Or the measurement isn't a relevant measurement, for instance. So, yeah, we're keeping scores. But then I always like rank what are those metrics that matter most that will move the needle? Because we tend to measure way too many things. We might have 30 things in a scorecard. I remember the owners at Java City, or Irish accountants, right? And good people, but they had 147 metrics. And we cranked them out, and I said, I'll give you seven, right? Here's the seven that matter. Let's talk about those, right? And the rest are in the packet, the board packet. But most people measure way too many ones that don't matter. Prioritize the ones that matter. Spend your time on those, right? And making those better, and we'll be far better off.
For these startups, typically they're, again, early stage companies, high growth companies typically are less focused on the bottom line, the profitability from what I see, and more focused on the top line and new client acquisition. Is that what you see as well?
I'm saying
in terms of like what to focus on, top line versus bottom line or new customers versus customer retention.
It just depends on your situation, really. So a lot of times I see customer penetration getting a short shrift. It's all about new business. But I would draw a little matrix up there. And then you have maybe seven product lines. And I start company A, B, C, customer A, B, C. Said, how many of our product lines are in customer A, right? And we name a customer one. We go, okay. So let's pretend, let's just get an average dollars per customer in these different categories. So we start adding up with their main customers, like tier one, all the like size of the prize of what we could be selling within that customer, and it blows them away. I said, you're inside the fort right now in this customer. How do we find a way to sell them more? Because you're in the door, right? So that's usually where we go. That's the easier way to grow your business. And of course, you know, we want to sell new business that's relevant. So I guess it just depends. There may be opportunity, better opportunity within your existing customers, or no, we exhausted that. So we need to go get new customers. Revenue, profitability, I just say we live in an and world. We need both, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah. But profit is the oxygen for the business.
We can't give financing that the short trip. Is not as easy as it has been in other times economically. You know, these times are maybe a little bit tougher to get financing, whether it be, you know, equity type financing or bank financing with higher interest rates and so on. It's a little bit more of a difficult environment. So we got to make some profit.
Yeah. And so it's product mix too. So if we have product mixes that are unfavorable right now because we're selling our main line, it's just with a customer today, our main line was really low. I said, what else do we sell? Oh, these are like, you know, 40% margin versus 15. I'm like, so what's stopping us from selling those things, right? So
we aren't asking for the order. We aren't marketing that product.
So sometimes it's just a realization that we can do that, and or there's a barrier, perceived barrier from doing that we can solve some way creatively to sell more of that. So we're just changing the mix in what we're selling in 1 year can dramatically change our profitability.
I've been through that
in owning a company. Again, another easier way to do it besides just going to sell new customers. We want to do that too, but there's a lot of internal things we can do.
I think every company that we've invested into has had to pivot. You know, early on, you end up making these pivots. You attack from, or they go out of business, right? You attack from a different direction, which I think of as a pivot. And luckily we've had, you know, virtually all of them are, you know, still fighting a good fight, but they all are changing and making those changes, especially those early stage companies. We know that, but these more mature companies having to evolve their vision when they are comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. It's working. Why would I don't break, you know, don't change if it ain't broken type thing. How do you know when to pivot as a more mature company?
Well, a lot of times it's too late. Because remember I said about you have to differentiate and continuously do that. And if you can get complacent and if there's a differentiator you have now, you're the market leader. And again, your competitor wants to jump down your back, yeah. spike you.
We all know the Blockbuster story, yeah. right? Blockbuster was
exactly.
dominant. Yeah.
And we can't see it coming, right? We're not like in our competitors' offices knowing what they're working at. We got to assume they're working on something that can make us obsolete. I always like to say our business is at risk every day. That was my mantra. We got to service well. We got to come up with new products that lead the way. So I just say never, never, never stop. Don't take your foot off the differentiation pedal. Right? You're always thinking of that. And if you come down to the very end and there's nothing more, that's really hard at that point. But you pivot. You can course correct and pivot in the course of differentiating your business too. You may find that, geez, there's just nothing more here. But if I, you know, added this or took away that, and that's a course correction or maybe even a pivot, we're using our product in a way, completely different way in a different category. That's a pivot. And that's maybe a good pivot because it uses what we're doing well in a different way. And that's another way of finding growth. But I don't see a lot of companies sometimes looking at those things, right? They just look at what I do. I've got a competitive advantage. I'm growing. And all of a sudden, they go from 20% a year down to 10, down to 5. And they're like, what is happening around here, right? So something's making them a little bit more commoditized there.
Yeah. And one of the things that you mentioned, bringing in outsiders to give you a different perspective. One of the things I would say to a more mature company, could even be a larger company, it could be a municipality, it could be a government agency, is to be around startups and the innovative economy, because these things that we've been doing for the last 30 years or 50 years or 100 years, they are in the process of changing. And when you go spend time around very innovative people, very innovative companies, some of that creativity rubs off on you. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest any larger company or medium-sized organization, go spend some time around the innovative economy, and you'll be surprised at how much these, let's call them, these young people can influence you in a really positive way to think a little bit different, think a little more innovatively, so you don't become Blockbuster.
No, I think that's great. I love that. But the company has to adjust. So if you take that let's go look at the way startup companies are doing things, bring it back without changing how you do things. Because remember, that's the way you're doing it, maybe slow and steady is slow and steady. That's how we do things. You have to like take it maybe outside the company, separate company or Skunk Works or something like that, where they have their different culture, different rules, different way they do things. If you put it inside the mothership and it's slow and steady with this
inside
new idea,
the bureaucracy,
we're not going to do
take
anything.
It and spin it off into its own startup or its own division that can have a little more
autonomy. I've been with Nestle and General Mills, and that's what we did. We used to bring them into the mothership, and we were like a battleship trying to take this little idea and make it big because we were good at that. So finally I realized we got to spin it off into this own little entity. Don't bother them. Give them the cash. Give them the resources they need and make this thing work, right?
Well, that's why a lot of those larger companies have their own venture arms where they basically go invest into these companies or acquire these companies.
Exactly,
and they don't necessarily bring them right into the you know,
nurture
major
them
company.
And when it's time, they'll acquire it. Yeah. So.
Okay, so what did I not ask you? It's year end. We've got people that are hungry and they want to win in 2023 or 2024 and beyond. What did I not ask you that we could share that would help position entrepreneurs to unleash their potential?
Yeah, I think that spend time on the business and thinking strategically on your business. It's not just a once a year thing. It's like quarterly. Spend the time quarterly. Get out of your office. Sit down with your team. Dust off your vision. And that's when you're recalibrating, sometimes course correcting. Sometimes you react way too late. Hey, this thing's not working. You wait till the end of the year or three. That's not the time to do it. Get out of the office every quarter to be thinking about the business. Sometimes you're just recalibrating, even course correcting a vision, improving and iterating on it. Make sure you spend time to do that because it can really be the difference between okay performance and then really game-changing performance over time.
Craig Hetrick, he is an expert in this realm. He is central to the Backyard Advantage, and thanks for bringing the love and helping me and all of my entrepreneurial buddies. Without you, we would be a whole lot further behind. So we're making progress, and thank you for helping us do that.
Thank you, Mark. Really enjoy it. Okay. Take care.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the Backyard Advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.